Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kalb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Hillary Ramo. And she has written a book called The Hillary Ramo Show Transcripts, Conversations on Technology, Time Travel, ETs, 9/11, and Consciousness. Hillary's radio career began in 2005 on a local radio show in upstate New York and soon expanded to online radio markets as a syndicated program. And in 2008, she launched the Hillary Ramo Show on Achieve Radio and rose to number one on that network. And she's had quite an interesting career interviewing different whistleblowers and different experts in probably the same thing that Temple of Health does, consciousness, holistic medicine, and spiritual research. And she then put together a book called The Hillary Ramo Show Transcripts with some of her more interesting interviews. And I was really impressed with the book. I think that the interviews are just really important to get out there in written form. There's a whole bunch of different radio shows on today that have a great deal of information, and I think it's great to put this into a form that people can, that maybe a wider audience can see. Thanks for joining us, Hillary.
Hi, Dr. Kalb. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So would you like to give the audience a little bit of your background and how you became a radio show host and your interest in the topics that are discussed in the book?
Absolutely. My background, my professional background, is in business, psychology, real estate, and insurance. And along the way through all that, I found my way to Reiki, shamanism, different types of spirituality, alternative information. And while I was studying with Lynn V. Andrews many, many, many years ago, she told me one day in private conversation to go read all of David Icke's work, Eek, and I picked up the book.
Good place to start.
It is a good place to start, and in fact, because the request came from her, I had absolutely, you know, no hesitation whatsoever to do it, and I think if it hadn't come from her, I probably would not have done it, because his information, as you probably know, is very difficult to get through, and very open your psyche, oh my gosh, in a very dramatic almost kind of way. But however, what I appreciated most about David Icke's work was the fact that he could talk about these subjects and then always weave in some kind of energetic or spiritual perspective facet aspect of the material, which I think was always very important. And so once I did this, it took about 2.5 years, 3 years to go through his material. He lost me on some topics, and others I found so fascinating that I actually started to read his source books. And as I did, I realized that the source books led to other kinds of research. And of course, I didn't know it at the time, but I was preparing to go and launch my radio show. And the reason I chose to start the radio show was because after going through all of that information that he presented way back then, I needed an outlet to discuss it, and it was very difficult to go to close family members or friends to start talking about some of this material because nobody wants to talk about it. These are the things in the closet that nobody wants to talk about. It's kind of like health. You know, you don't really want to talk about the things that are wrong, but we have to talk about the things that are wrong, and we also have to talk about the things that can be healed and brought to the light, and we can learn more and more about ourselves and other people if we do so. So I began my radio show based on that journey through David Icke's work, and that's why I chose to have him as the first chapter in the book.
Yeah, David Icke is just an amazing, brave person. That's all I can say. I mean, to actually present this information, to go through the kind of ridicule that he had to go through. And then I just love what he said when you questioned him about his safety, you know, how come he wasn't, you know, not on the planet anymore. And his answer was wonderful. It just shows how spiritually evolved he is.
I appreciated I appreciated his candidness in that answer. And I think it was an important one, and I felt very called to ask him that because at the time, well, in the industry, we had huge waves of people going through whistleblower-type information, and it was starting to become a dangerous thing for people to come out and talk about this stuff. And I always felt that, well, kind of like what David said, I always felt that you still have to do it. I mean, you still just have to do it. And sometimes being public and very loud about the things that you're talking about is actually better than whispering about it over in the corners and not really talking about it too loudly because you're afraid. And fear, as we all know, has a very distinct vibration, and it brings in things that kind of actually manifest us. So stay away from it, keep your vibration high, and talk about whatever you want. How's that for free speech?
Right, yeah, and follow your guidance, too. I think he had to. He was put in a position where he had to follow his guidance, even from the beginning, and that is so important, because if you're following your guidance, then you know it's a kind of a race. You need to become public enough so that you're safer, and yet you still have to specifically follow each piece of guidance so that if there are dangers, you can circumvent around them.
Well, I think it keeps you safe in many ways, too. Like you said, there is a kind of a catch-22 with it, because the more public you become, the more of a target you are for the crazy troll mudslingers that love to come in and wreak havoc wherever they go and try to discredit and all of that. So you have to have a thick skin. You have to be able to really handle that, and you have to have good spiritual armor. And I believe that the more you're able to stay in your creative energy, the more that you're grounded with the people you love around you, the more support you have with good, wonderful friends who know how to talk about everything and hold you in that space as you do that is very vital in the ability to be able to be called a true truth seeker.
Right. Well, talk a little bit about when you ask him why he was, you know, not taken out like many of the other whistleblowers, you know, share with the audience what his theory was, what he thought was going on.
Well, he just thought that he was, you know, because he was safe in what he was doing. The feeling I always got from David, we did four or five shows together over the course of my time on the air. And, you know, David always had this attitude that he's going to do it no matter what, and he's not going to be stopped, and he's going to stay in that vibration. And so that's kind of how he always explained it to me. And I always found a lot of honor in that. And I felt like he was honoring his integrity with his calling and what he was meant to do. He was playing a role in it. And I also think that sometimes, you know, there's this whole, oh my gosh, my life is in danger if I talk about this. Well, I don't really think your life is in danger if you talk about certain things. It's more about how many people are listening. And if you don't have the millions and millions of listeners and you're not influential in today's sort of mainstream type standards, you're not a threat to anybody. You're too small. We're too small sometimes. We're too small to make an effect. But that's betting on the, you know, the thought form or the reality that numbers matter, and it's really an old paradigm, and it's very old school, but it's very old school power structured. So if we have an industry that's based on numbers and ratings and all of that sort of thing, well, if you're not really making a ripple, you're not, you know, as long as they just ignore you, you're over there throwing, you know, up the truth in the air, and you only have 10 people listening, then you're really not going to have your life threatened because you start talking about certain materials. However, that does change when you start to get into health topics, interestingly enough, or vaccines, or GMOs, or
Jeffrey Smith. I know you interviewed Jeffrey Smith probably. He's another amazing one, you know, in terms of the people he's reached, and yet he's still okay. He gave me a bunch of advice when I was about to publish my book, you know, to self-publish, don't let anybody else. I mean, it was like 20 different things. I followed all of his advice and did fine with it. It was very interesting. I have one thing to share. Right when the implants were coming back on the market, NBC asked me to go to a local affiliate here in Atlanta and be on national TV. Well, I heard right away that that wasn't going to happen because it was way too public. It was, you know, it was way getting to millions of people rather than just maybe hundreds on this show or thousands, you know, over time. But it was way too big. So, but I went ahead and tried to go down there. I went into my my van, and it the battery was dead on my van, okay? And so I was calling AAA, and then the NBC called me and said that there was a ferry accident that day, I think up in New York or Massachusetts or somewhere. And that story had kicked me off, so I wasn't going to be on NBC talking about breast implants. Isn't that interesting?
Of course it's interesting. And see, you make a really good point because, you know, they'll never put me on mainstream TV.
Right.
Never. You'll never see me on. Alex Jones didn't even want me on his show because I talked about some of these outrageous topics at the time. And I don't know, I know that more of that. I was in Hollywood this past week for the ESPY show, and I had found myself walking into something I normally would never even want to walk into, actually, because the energies are very strong. I'm very sensitive to it and all that. But I've gotten a thick skin over the years because I've been in a lot of things, around a lot of things, talked about a lot of things,
right.
Had a lot of, you know, backlash on certain things and other things that people love it. So when I was walking through the whole land of the beautiful people this past week, it was one of those things where it's such a production. I mean, every little thing down to the most minute detail is expertly handled, to the point where there is absolutely no way they are going to let anything in without intentionally letting it in, knowing
right,
that the information is going to reach millions of people. It's very, very, very selective.
Yeah, well, Operation Mockingbird, you know, it probably is controlled at, you know, at a central level that is quite quite strict, and you know, we probably won't see that come down until, you know, after the arrests and after great changes occur. That'll probably be one of the last things that opens up is the information channels. But
well, if you think about it,
Hollywood is
the center of the entire planet's entertainment system. So if you if you could imagine it as one giant video game, this is the grand master infrastructure of the world's entertainment. And if we're not entertained, we're not distracted. And if we're not distracted, we pay attention to really important things. So it's really easy for the production masters of this country, especially, to be able to put things together to distract the masses, because we love drama.
Mm-hmm.
And loving
right.
drama creates a lot of wonderful distractions for people to lose themselves into, so that they don't ask about breast implants or your immune system or tics or things. Pick a topic, right, and just put it
right.
on the table.
Yeah.
Don't look at that. Go over there and look at this. And it's so planned and produced and intentional, and anything to disconnect your connection to nature,
right.
love, other people, profound, deep thinking. Anything that stops that is worthy of an Oscar.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's very true. Well, your second chapter is Dr. David Lewis Anderson, who actually I never knew Dr. Anderson's was working on time travel technologies. Would you like to talk about him a little bit? I was fascinated
sure.
by this chapter.
Yeah, a lot of people are. I've been doing a bunch of shows for the book launch here, and I get asked that a lot, actually. They really enjoyed his information. And back in 2010, when I was doing a lot of those shows related to that kind of technology and UFOs and ETs and all that, sort of happened within a certain segment of years through my career.
Mm-hmm.
And David was doing the talk show circuit, the alternative radio talk show circuit at the time. And I guess after 2010, he went into the government sector. His company was private. He had actually talked quite clearly about the difference between time control and time travel, and how data is able to go back in time. They couldn't do anything forward in time yet, but they had been able to send data back in time, which opens up a tremendous platform for a fantastic discussion and conversation that we should all be having, instead of what an idiot Donald Trump is. If we're going to spend all our energy talking about dumb things, then we don't get into the really interesting, fascinating, deep human thinking, probing, stirring your inner consciousness kind of conversations, because God forbid we have those. That's where the real freedom and humanity lies.
Yeah. Well, and you have to ask the questions. I mean, if time travel does exist, and if these technologies do exist, the holographic medical beds and all of these things do exist, the free energy devices, you know, why are we living in the world we're living in? You know, it becomes a question of the control masters and overthrowing them, and then that's what they don't want. They don't want us to ask those questions.
Well, I think they also don't want us to know who really is doing it. I believe that the alternative media has allowed kind of a conundrum to happen, because what happens is we hear information on a radio show, we take it for truth, we don't do our own investigations, we don't go Google. By the way, Google only accesses 4% of information. You have the dark web mm-hmm. that holds all the archives of all the big stuff we don't have access to.
Right.
But when you Google a question, you take that answer as truth. Yes, most people listening would say yep. And if you're not doing it, I'm sure you know people who are. So when you take that kind of power and you put it into whose hands, who controls access? Did you know that right. if I'm in one location and another person's in another location and we both Google the same thing, not everything shows up the same way? Because the algorithms have been created to personalize your internet experience according to what they've studied of you for all these years. And mm-hmm. a lot of that is marketing, right? A lot of that is to sell you something. Right. A lot of that is to make money for somebody somewhere. I'd like to know who this team is who runs the internet. Who are the people that make these kinds of determinations as to which information we're allowed access to? We don't know any of those people. We're obsessed with Russia and Facebook and again, Donald Trump, and we're obsessed with all these different presented entities of distraction, which are expertly produced by massively high-budgeted management team type sorts, and we don't even know it because we've been groomed as a culture to accept what we see on our screens as truth, to accept the answers Google gives us, to accept the acceleration of technology as human advancement. But we're not talking about healing, and we're not talking about consciousness, and we're not talking about telepathic relations that we have the abilities to honor and nurture and create, not only with ourselves and other people, but nature. We're not having the right conversations. We're having the wrong conversations in the wrong context. And I hope that my book inspires people to read these conversations and to question their own ability to be able to navigate information in such a landfill swamp of information.
Mm-hmm. David Anderson talks about the Philadelphia experiment, saying that it was, you know, it absolutely did happen, and that, you know, we've done these experiments in time travel, and they've been successful. And that was my information through a doctor who had been in the CIA, who knew a large amount of information about the Philadelphia and the Montauk projects, including details that aren't in the public domain. So, we know from at least I feel credible witnesses like David Anderson and my friend who was a doctor that we probably have been doing. And when was the Philadelphia experiment? It was in the late 1940s, is that right?
Oh, we've come a long way. Peter Moon does
yeah.
a great job of bringing
so
a lot of that. So
we have to have this technology, and we have to have it to a great degree better than what the Philadelphia experiment was, which was kind of a mess. So, I think that's going to be part of disclosure, hopefully.
Well, I think the subject about disclosure, let's talk about that mm-hmm. for a minute, because
sure.
disclosure, Dr. Stephen Greer's interview is in my book. I
right.
also went on expedition with him to Mount Shasta back in 2010 and did a 7-night kind of retreat with him and 50 other people. And we
mm-hmm.
had people from all over the world there and all sorts of different, coming from different backgrounds. And we
uh-huh.
all saw the same thing. You know, we all saw what we saw for our own eyes. And Dr. Greer's message has always been that ETs are kind and good
right.
and they're here and they're so advanced that they kind of take pity on us poor Stone Age type technology culture. And, Dr. Greer did something most of the other ET UFO people don't do, and that is
mm-hmm.
bring the spiritual aspects into the work.
Right.
To do the pujas and the prayers and talking about higher consciousness. I'm a firm believer mm-hmm. that stuff actually brings them in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I have a comment on, I'm jumping forward to Lynn Andrews. Lynn mentioned that they were on a retreat and saw three lights that she felt were extraterrestrial. And I just wanted to tell you this, and maybe you'll share it with Lynn. There is, when ships come in from a higher dimension and enter our dimension, what you will see is a triangle of three lights. That's the first thing you see. So a lot of times they'll just come in and you'll see those three lights, and that tells you that a higher dimensional form is coming into this one. But they just hover there. They don't actually come in. They just hover there to let you see the three points of light, and then they go back out. And so Lynn may not know that, but that is a definite higher dimensional structure coming into our dimension. That's what you see, is a triangle
of
three lights.
Lynn is a very spiritual person, and if you look at her work over the mm-hmm. decades that she's been doing it, I mean, she's written like 20 books, 21 books maybe,
right.
And she's always working to take women, men and women through a modern-day shamanic type of experience, learning, teaching, where she gives people the tools to be able to apply a higher perspective of spirituality to everyday mm-hmm. mundane things, which is exactly what we need to do. Not everybody can go off to Tibet for 6 months and do a retreat in a monk's temple and do all
right.
those kinds of things. So we need to be able to give people of everyday experience a toolbox of sorts so that they can navigate themselves and their relationship to other people in the world around them and the seen and unseen aspects of all
mm-hmm.
that. Lynn does a fantastic job of doing that. I went through her four-year school. I mentored her students for 2 years. I helped her help teach her online courses for a few years. I've met lots of wonderful people. Some women I'm still friends with after all these years because
mm-hmm.
of our experiences through there. And all it was, really, was retraining your mind to see the world in a different perspective. And I think all the people in my book who I had these conversations with have the ability to be able to present information in a way
mm-hmm.
that allows a person listening or reading, and I think reading is much more effective in this case than listening to a show when you're trying to keep up and you got all,
mm-hmm.
oh, you're listening to the
We're
personalities
yeah.
and, yeah, and the wordage and, oh, she just said, and you don't have any of that in the book. You can just
right.
skip to the good parts.
You can reread
and
parts,
take your
which
time.
I did,
and
or go Google things. I went to Google, you know, when Judy Wood was talking about people taking their clothes off before jumping out of the tower. You bet I Googled that. That was
how many other people have actually? How many other people have you heard talk about that? It has been astounding. Some, yeah, some, but not very many. And
well, maybe a witness or two, but nobody explained why. But Judy, I mean, it
when
was
you go down and visit the 9/11 memorial site, the first thing you're mm-hmm. presented with when you walk into the museum is a wall that shows the story, the official 9/11 story. And this is what
mm-hmm.
happened. It's such a massive brainwashing place,
yeah.
and I do
yeah,
not
sure.
say that with any disrespect in my heart towards anybody that died, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have to make that really clear. I have a lot of respect for the people that lost their lives that day, but we just have not had the right conversation around the 9/11 material, and unfortunately alternative media has been such an infiltrated platform where disinformation
mm-hmm.
is just given like coffee, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's your morning coffee. Here you go,
right.
disinformation. Here you go. It's so easy for people to come on. You have
mm-hmm.
authors who suddenly have 12 best-selling books out on the market on the subject, or
mm-hmm.
I'm like, where did you come from? I've never heard of you before, and now suddenly you have all this material out there. You have to question that. You have to question. I mean, anybody who's written a book, whether you've gone through a mainstream publisher or self-published, knows how
mm-hmm.
much work it really is to put together something of that sort. And then I really did in my career see people come out onto the platform, fast track to celebrityism in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of them before, have all these books, best-selling author on Ancient Aliens, straight up to the History Channel, straight up to, you know, whatever's beyond that. And I don't know. I just have that perspective on the whole industry, and I think we have to be really careful with what we bite on. Like it's like a hook. It hooks you into a stream of thought, consciousness, and that's physical, emotional, spiritually, mentally intact, and grabs you, and you just take that as truth and run around and tell everybody you can that will listen. We have to be careful not to get sucked into the point where we lose our common sense. And we have to look up information and be very mindful that even what we Google may or may not be true, because if they're censoring things like Facebook and they're censoring YouTube and all of this content, you know, years and years ago, we didn't have the same kind of limitations we have on these platforms now. And many people benefited from the connectedness of these platforms. And it did change the world so powerfully that suddenly the people that are in charge said, whoa, we have people becoming well-known who have alternative thinking. We have people being able to deliver alternative health information to massive amounts of people. We have to control that because the drug companies don't like it. Let's talk about that, right? Nobody's really having those conversations without, it's all Illuminati and the whistleblowers and the New World Order, and oh my God, they're trying to kill us. Well, I don't know, but maybe, right? It could be true. Let's talk about GMOs, and let's talk about vaccines and how they're going bad, and we inject people with these drugs and it causes autism. Let's talk about that on mainstream media. Let's go on CNN and talk about that. No, they're not going to let you do it because you're dealing with a gazillion dollar industry that runs the world and has nothing to do with Donald Trump.
When they pay for
Trump.
The commercials on the TV shows, you know, they're not going to interfere with that.
They sponsor the big events. I mean, we're talking Hollywood.
Do. They do.
Hollywood. Yeah. Okay, I mean,
Lyrica for fibromyalgia, you know.
Right.
Never mind that fibromyalgia is due to yeast and mold biotoxins and intracellular infections. Treating the cause is out the window. You just have to take a pill for the rest of your life.
Amen, sister, to that. I love how you just worded that, because that is exactly what it is. Never mind the true facts of things that are happening. Never mind the lack of liability all of these massive industries have, and never mind the control of regulations by small groups of people that run the world, right? And the Illuminati, that's the New World Order. Maybe, but I really don't think people really have any clue who really is pulling the strings in these things, because they lie in offices up on the, you know, 110th floor of some big corporate building someplace.
Well, they certainly aren't known. They're not known names. Maybe Rockefeller and Rothschild, the family names, but probably the people who are really controlling things stay well out of the limelight, I would imagine.
Yeah, and the only reason we really know the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds like that is because of alternative media and people like David Icke and the writers who've put all together the research that have shown the corporate connections back to the big families. We can't stop there. We have to take a look at the other families that aren't so well known, or the people behind these big corporations, the secret societies, the esoteric promises made, the Freemasons. I mean, we have to talk about that, but what's happened is it's become, again, a very cliche thing to run through alternative media to make people, listeners, hosts, everybody who talks about it, kind of talk about it like, oh, I know a secret. I know a secret, and this is happening, right? Well, the big secret is, you know, you and your family and your friends are all taking pills that are going to create such problems in your body, they're going to cut your life short, and therefore your whole energy systems are going to be taken off planet too soon.
Right.
When we should be here interacting with each other, helping to raise our energy. Do you know the ancient Egyptians spent a lot of time preparing for the afterlife? And compare that to our lives today in our modern westernized culture and see the gap.
Yeah. Yeah, we just pretty much avoid the topic.
So we got to talk about
it. Don't talk about it.
Yeah, we got to talk about it. It's your show. It's shows like yours. It's shows like this, shows like mine that have brought this out to the surface and given people an option to consider. I mean, people don't have to consider it. They can shut, you know, they can stick their head in the sand. They can shut down. Mm-hmm. They can create some kind of drama that keeps them from doing it. I mean, there's a million ways of human experience that allows this stuff to happen because we're all accountable for that. We have all aided in it in some way, whether knowingly or not. And that's pretty much what I think the harshest mirror is for most people, is that mm-hmm. they talk about not wanting negative energy on the planet. They talk about free speech, and they talk about, you know, not being racist towards other people and all these big, hot, modern-day topics to discuss. But yet, when they have thoughts that are negative, or they're home and nobody's looking, and they're rageaholics, or they're people that just can't be nice to their kids, that's really where the energy stems from, is that, you know, we mm-hmm. start at home, we start within ourselves, and we spread out from right. there. And information really isn't any different.
Yeah, I've interviewed a large number of people on, you know, near-death experience. I interviewed that psychologist that did 1,000 hypnotherapy sessions and took people between lives and found that everything was all the same. You know, it might have been Robert Newton. And basically, if you interview enough people, you realize that there really is nothing to fear about death at all. In fact, you know, it's really kind of it's going to be a good experience if you look at all the research done into it. And it is important, like the Egyptians and the Indians like Gandhi, preparing to enter death in the right mental state. You know, that it's probably quite quite an amazing transition. It's probably one that is very, very sacred. So but you replace that with the fear of death, and we interviewed Deepak Chopra. I had a TV show for 6 years and interviewed him, and he wrote a book called How to Know God. And my last question to him is, well, after you write this book, what's your next book about? And he said it was the fear of death, because he said for most people the fear of death is their greatest fear,
yeah.
which was true. And he said we need to address that, and I think that's very true.
We need to all look
at our fears, and the fear of death yeah. is a big one.
Well, we've all been groomed to fear death, if you think about it. I mean, mm-hmm. the basic structure of our financial system is based on the fear of death, really, if you want to get into that. It's like everything that we surround ourselves with in modern-day culture has some aspect of fear of death. Look at aging, for example. How many mm-hmm. men can love an aged woman? How many women can love an aged man? Maybe a lot, but we've been culturized to look at beauty in a very specific way and mm-hmm. to idolize that in many instances. We have a billion-dollar porn industry that makes sex and intimacy quite difficult. The mm-hmm. appreciating of realistic bodies versus idolized bodies of that sort can really screw up a young man or young woman's idea of what they're supposed to look like, and can create a whole shaming culture. It's a vicious cycle, really. Mm-hmm. And when you go through your healing awakening, whenever you do, because most people eventually do go through some kind of awakening, and you realize that none of that matters, and you look back and say, well, how much time did I waste caring about such superficial, idiotic things?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have sure. to somehow manage a way to reconcile that within yourself, and then most people move out into the world from there, some kind of changed person. Many times they have epiphanies, career path changes. They start projects that maybe they never would have started. So we have all these kinds of different landmark happenings, life events, that are usually based around some kind of breakdown of reality for people. And I think we yeah. need to do it because we're born into a really strange place. I mean, I believe in reincarnation. I believe in a lot of things, mm-hmm. but I don't believe in religion, and I don't believe that if I go into my death experience, I have to have made some kind of vow of allegiance to a specific person, or I'm going to go burn in hell. I don't think right. that life is designed that way. None of the near-life, yeah. Near-death experiences that I've ever read or heard of or experienced have confirmed that in any way whatsoever. I've been to Egypt I'm going for the fifth time in February with Maria Wheatley. I have a group trip coming up, taking a group of people over there to relook at some of the most significant texts that are scribed into the walls, to intuitively feel into the symbols. Now imagine if we did that and talked about it, forget it. nobody's going to give you any airtime. maybe people like us, right? But nobody really wants that information getting out because, God forbid, you upset billions of people on the planet who have spent their entire lives in meaningless things a sudden mass wake-up call.
Right. That's true.
So create Hollywood and entertain them with movies.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Well, speaking of Hollywood, there's a great, trend to portray extraterrestrials as quite, you know, that they're coming to eat us or take over the world or the fear-based thing. Dr. Greer was talking about that in his interview, that on one level we're being programmed by the media we will be, we need to fear the aliens. Would you like to comment on that?
Absolutely. His interview and Dr. Carol Rosen's interview coincide with this very much. If you have nice aliens coming to the planet, you don't need to spend zillions of dollars on building your space weapons, right? You don't get your budget for NASA. You don't when they privatized NASA, think about it. They no longer had to disclose the payloads going up into space. If it was a government entity, they had to disclose that. So what they've been building up there, really, we really don't know. Nobody really knows unless you know. So if you don't know what's going on up there, you are completely clueless about what's happening on this planet.
Way beyond nukes, though. We know
well,
that.
I think the nuclear...
The scalar weapons, the plasma weapons, that's probably what... Because who wants to use nuclear weapons? It's too messy. You know?
Well, so the nuclear weapon topic keeps people at a certain level of understanding. The minute you say,
fear.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's fear-based. You're hooked through fear.
Right.
But you're also hooked through really old ways of controlling people. And if people are just focused on nuclear stuff, then that's a distraction in itself, really, because what's been evolved is so beyond that. And Judy Wood talks about this in our conversation in the book about new physics, different very, very important evidence of a different kind of physics at work at the 9/11 site. And if you take that into consideration with Dr. Greer's conversation, Dr. Greer talks about it's us that are violent. It's humanity that is an angry, victimized, can't get past kindergarten type of emotional mentality, refuse to acknowledge that you even have a connection with another person. You go spend years, do I love this person? Where's my soulmate? Oh, my God. And you go on and on and on, missing the point often of having that presence so strongly anchored in the now moment that the question doesn't even matter anymore. You're just experiencing something. Then all of a sudden, guess what? Animals feel it around you. Plants notice. It goes back to our indoctrination in school, primary school for many countries. Many people are taught that anything that doesn't move is not alive. So a plant isn't technically alive. Or, the bush of the tree, the water. You go to the indigenous cultures and their earth-centered ways teach the exact opposite, which is why they've been systematically pulled out and terrorized and killed. And you want to talk about something that's unfair about humanity? You want to talk about racism? Let's talk about the Native American plight. Let's talk about the people that were here before we came over to this country and made it the United States of America. We are a young country.
Or actually any continent. I mean, it's
any continent, but specifically the United States.
And Australia. Yeah.
We're very young. We're a very young country in the general terms of countries, right? So we have a very kind of toddler, teenage type energy as an entity. You go over to Europe, the entity over there is a little more wise. You have a lot more different kinds of deep history there that we don't have in the United States. Yet, we have the muscle power. Yet, we have the bank accounts. Yet, we can go in and help any country in the whole world become modernized. I have a really great chapter in the book by a man named John Perkins who wrote a book called The Economic Hitman. And he was a whistleblower who came out of the corporate world who identified the fact that these countries are oftentimes targeted, seduced by having electrical infrastructures. All of this has to be loaned Then they create loans, and they create the banking system, and they create the dependence, and, oh, well, we don't make enough money to pay that back. Okay, so we repossess your country. Thank you so much. Now we're going to build 5 military bases, and we own you.
Right.
It's a very conquering type energy, but now you don't even have to go to war anymore. All you have to do is get people to sign on the bottom line and turn over their entire existence. It's like going to college. Okay, pay $20,000 every 6 months for people who barely make $20,000 a year. How do you set kids off into a culture or a system where they're $100,000 in debt and they can't get a job? Well, that's because
that's
they need
true.
You to be in debt so they can control you for the rest of your life.
Right. That's very true. And as Perkins pointed out, who ultimately benefits the most are these multinational corporations who then come in. And I love the example about the oil lake that's in the middle of the Amazon really mucking everything up, and they just let that be, you know, that the government at the time just let the corporations do that.
And money, greed, a disregard for the respect of nature. You ask any indigenous culture anywhere on this planet who has any type of earth-centered ways how they've been targeted. You want to talk about life being threatened. You want to talk about that kind of stuff. Let's have that conversation, because these people know how to respect life. They know how to plant biodynamically. God forbid you mention that on mainstream anything, right? Biodynamic, in connection with the sun, the moon, the prayers, the dreams, the intuition, the love between people. These cultures have been systematically wiped out because the machine that has taken over doesn't do things that way.
And one of the worst atrocities, of course, is Fukushima. And the Japanese finance minister going live right after that and explaining why it happened, and people just don't understand the basis of that. Jim Mars, your interview with Jim Mars, though, goes into that. Same thing. It was a attack. I don't know which weapon. I've heard nuclear. I've heard scalar. I've heard all sorts of things. But causing the tsunami to affect the nuclear plants because the Japanese were going to join the BRIC nations, and then they decided not to after that attack.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation.
Look at all the radiation that is killing.
Well, we
all
still
forces.
Haven't done anything about it. I mean, Fukushima is still.
And they lie
a problem.
About it. They lie about the seriousness of it, or the, and they don't really, you know, you don't really understand that it's affecting California. It's affecting a lot of other places.
I read an article recently that talked about how opioids are showing up in seafood. Okay, so the conversations that we don't have really just don't clue us into how bad the contamination is. We don't talk about the garbage patches in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. We don't talk about Fukushima, because who's going to pay for the cleanup? Who's liable? It's always come. My background in insurance taught me something really interesting. And when it comes down to corporations and people versus industries and all that, it's all about liability. Nobody wants to take the financial liability of having to admit that people's kids are being born with autism because of bad vaccine batches. If we are required by law to get them, don't we have a fundamental right to know where the drug comes from? Is there any recall information on it? What specific one are you giving me? What's the lot number? There was this really fascinating YouTube interview of parents who had triplets. I have it on my social media if you guys are interested in it. Forgive me for not remembering the name right now. But she and her husband were on the air talking about how they took their triplets in one day for the pneumonia vaccine. And they're under a year old, I think, or maybe between one and two. They're young. They're under 2 years old. They stopped having they noticed that something changed in them within the same day of getting the vaccine. This is a relatively new vaccine, too, by the way. They didn't actually force children to get it, I think, until I think it was 2014 or 15 maybe, that it became mandatory for kids 12th grade and under to get these to be able to be part of their vaccination requirements for school. So she got home with her triplets, and suddenly she noticed a few hours later that they were acting very weird. They weren't smiling. They had kind of just shut off.
Right.
And they ended up going through this extremely huge process. They saw a geneticist. Mm-hmm. They were told that it was a genetic disorder, but then they were told by another doctor the odds of all three kids coming down with the symptoms of a genetic order in the same exact day are impossible.
Right.
It's an impossible thing, right? So this is really the world we're looking at. Now, who's responsible for that? How do you put a price tag on that? How do you say, well, we'll reward you X amount of dollars for the fact that our drugs gave your kids this? They were diagnosed with full spectrum autism disorder shortly after.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed Stephanie Marone, who wrote different books on mental health, and autism was one of the books. And in it, she presented a great deal of scientific evidence that at least a lot of autism is the heavy metals in genetically susceptible children. They don't have the enzyme to break down the metals or do something with the detoxification. And those who have a certain genetic, well, it could be genetic, it could be other cause of having their fontanelles fused, which of course you would at age 2, but even younger, if the fontanelles are not fused, then the risk of autism is a lot less, because when the frontal lobes swell, they don't get in trouble. But if the fontanelles are fused and the frontal lobes swell from this, the toxin in the vaccine, which could be aluminum, could be mercury, then you get the autism. And the thing that you need to do right away when you see the change is give them very high doses of cod liver oil, which is very protective. And a lot of people have been rescued with high doses of cod liver oil. So that's something that parents that decide to get vaccines might want to have on hand to give that day, you know, if they see the reaction.
It's so good that people like you know that and share that with the public.
Yeah,
and it really should be shared with us people who have kids that have to make these decisions. That really, I mean, the laws are set up to completely protect the drug companies in this case.
You can't sue the drug companies.
No.
I mean, that's the law. You can't sue them for anything with vaccines.
Do you know that?
Ridiculous.
Do you know that Aaron Schwartz, there was a young man named Aaron Schwartz, and I talk about him a lot on my interviews, because I think what he did was a great service to humanity. He was a computer programmer, a genius, who had hacked into the deep web and made available some of the academic law archives that are buried deep in there that you don't have access to. And what he had found in hacking that and pulling that out and looking at it was that the justice system is completely set up to benefit the corporations. End of story. Now, we all know that. We've been talking about this. We've all figured it out. But he actually proved it, and they went to town to destroy his life. They filed charges against him, and he was found dead in his apartment from apparent suicide, which I think is... Now, they offered him a plea deal that would have only given him six months in jail. I wonder what they offered him, but he refused
nothing wrong.
To do it. he refused to take
true.
It. I'm sure I would love to see the details of that, but he refused to take it, and then so they went full-blown after him, and he killed himself, supposedly, because he felt that he was stuck. There was no way out. It was absolutely hopeless. But I don't really believe that it was suicide myself, personally. So I have a very... I don't think that that's what it was. But that's the world we live in. Okay, and so how do we deal with that so everybody doesn't go home today feeling slimed and like they listen to a show? It gives them absolutely no hope. We have to educate ourselves on the realities of what we're dealing with, and we can't be so sucked in emotionally that we can't navigate it.
Right.
It is absolutely counted on that the average person cannot navigate this information because it's overload and it doesn't align with your belief systems, or it's too hard and heavy, or it's negative and dark. Get over it. Get over it and suck it up and go through the information anyway and use your intuitive gifts and abilities to navigate the information and see what you find. And please share it. Talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, we have to
I saw that firsthand with my mother. I knew right away with 9/11 that there was something not right, just intuitively. And, you know, of course, the evidence came out, Judy Wood's evidence, the evidence of Loose Change and all of the other shows that, that were done and the books that came out. So I decided to share that with my mother, who was in her 80s, and she could not handle it. I mean, she just literally, I felt bad that I even tried to share it with her because she just, it was so overwhelming to her that she would have a government that would, you know, participate in something like that, or you know, I'm not talking about necessarily the U.S. government, but the multinational governments that would do that. And basically, she just shut down, and we couldn't handle it. So I remember that, and I'm careful about who I talk to about 9/11 because there are people who just simply can't emotionally.
Well, they're not there yet. They're not there yet. I mean, imagine what I've been doing for the last 20 years. My own sister she would kind of glaze over when I would talk to her about certain things. Mm-hmm. And imagine how my conversations go with my inner circle. It's like I have a very select few people who I will have these conversations with, you know, privately. Right. And my sister has just now found her way to certain branches of this information, even though she has her own sister who's been doing this for so long. And she's like, did you know? And she'll say something to me, and I just kind of smile. Mm-hmm. And I don't even say a word, and she just goes on and on. Yeah. And she's so thankful to have somebody to hear
the doctor,
her out.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the trick is. The trick is to be able to find someone you can talk to about it, who does understand that even if they don't agree with it, it's okay to entertain the information, even in context of a conversation. And that's where the energy starts to do its work.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have many other people in the book. I just want to mention a few. You interviewed Stuart Trusty with Bitcoin and the Dark Web. That was fascinating. Information about Snowden. Wayne Madsen talked about the Edward Snowden years, and that was a lot of really good information. I watched the Snowden movie, but I did not realize until I read your interview about everything that was done to discredit him. I guess I just wasn't watching mainstream media during that time. But that was fascinating.
It's a formula. They're doing it with Trump, too. They do it with Trump. They do it with anybody that's in power that they're not able to control 100%.
Right.
I believe that's how it works. Trump, like him or not, no matter what you think of him, he doesn't just let people tell him what to do. And that's clear. And the same character assassination techniques that were used against Snowden, I've noticed, are being used against certain people and public figures now. So it's a formula
and
that works.
What's interesting is they're getting around it with the tweeting directly to the public, which Trump does, and then also the Q phenomena, which is fascinating. The idea that you can give certain information in the form of questions and still not go against national security, which you can. I mean, evidently that's the way you do it.
I love asking questions. I've built my career off asking questions. I think that's absolutely right. If you ask the right question in the right way, you can give information away.
He's not violating any and it's interesting. I was reading this thing that Q may not be one person. Q may be different aspects of the military intelligence community that is, of course, working very closely with Trump and probably asked Trump to run in the first place because he was able not to be controlled. Billionaires are probably the only people that can't be controlled, you know, at that level of politics.
Well, they can be
so he surrounded himself with these generals who are very, very patriotic. And so we think Q is military intelligence, but he may not be one person because it might be too dangerous to be one person who is Q.
Behind the scenes in a lot of these bigger things tend to be people who believe in channeled consciousness. Right. And I've seen it a lot. And really, if you go deep into like Scientology, or you go deep into some of the bigger spiritual technology ideologies that are used by very wealthy and powerful people, a lot of them are about channeled things, channeled entities, off-planet consciousnesses, right? They're already doing and talking about behind the scenes what we alternative people have been able to bring to the surface for mainstream consciousness to some extent. And if you knew that the powerful person running X powerful company believed in a channeled personality and made major corporate decisions based on that, I mean, you might see the world a little differently. So Q could very well be a channeled entity. Somebody out there has figured out a way to implement it into the digital landfill.
One of my patients' husbands had been working for the NSA, and then he ended up working directly for Rothschild, including the main Rothschild who recently died. So he knew them personally, and he told me that they told him that they were actually almost being controlled by the channeled dark forces, that sometimes they wondered if they weren't being controlled as well.
Yeah,
so that's
people said that about me.
People,
I mean, it depends what you talk about and who's listening and where they're coming from, really, right? Maybe they're not being controlled by really dark entities, but it's just perceived that way because what they're doing.
But they're telling
dark.
This guy that they think they might be. In other words, they question their free will. I mean, they're the first level in this dimension taking orders from this level. And David Icke talks about this in detail. That's what's in all his books.
Sure, yeah, sure he does.
And and yet, you know, this guy who, like I said, worked for, and then he became a whistleblower, and he would go and do the different, you know, venues that whistleblowers were doing, and he had had, I don't know, 8 attempts on his life. You know, but he had a lot of spiritual protection, and we talked about spiritual protection, and he gave me all the details of when they tried to kill him. So, I mean, the fact that he had 8 attempts on his life because he was releasing this information tells me that, you know, he probably was working with the Rothschilds, because why else would they be trying to kill him?
There's this other thing, too, that happens is that you're not actually credible until someone's tried to kill you.
Exactly.
I don't know
say,
how
you know,
much I believe that.
You don't have
that,
anything
Susan.
Important to say unless they've tried to kill you at least 4 times.
I mean, my dog tried to kill me once. He almost tripped me on the stairs, and I fell and died. I don't think that was a nefarious attack or anything. But you know what I do find is that these higher ups, these very deep secret society type people, and I've met a few in my life, really know how to work magic. And that's a whole nother topic that could be a whole nother hour.
It is,
And I'm not talking like burn a candle and say a prayer magic. I'm talking old magic. I'm talking 16th, 15th century, carried on through behind closed doors for the privileged. Right. It's not white privilege we should be talking about. It's magic privilege. I'm a book collector, so I collect very old, esoteric, religious-type books, because I want to read those and see what's in there versus something that was just published, you know, through some publishing company now, right? The information's completely different. It opens up a completely different perspective on topics that are going around all over the place today, and we should all be privy to that.
Yeah, well, I agree.
You know, but unless you buy a book and take the time to read that from some God long ago place, you're not going to really find what you're looking for. Online, some of these things are available, but how do you trust it? Do you know? Digital, anything can be manipulated.
I actually read those books when I was in high school. My friend, her sister worked in a library, and these books were not books that you could check out. These were books that were in the back that you couldn't check out, that actually you couldn't even access unless you knew they were in the back. But I know what you're talking about. I have read some of those books, so... and I studied them very early in life, so it's very true.
It is true. It is different information. You see, it gives a perfect example of how information influences society, okay? And when you have a meme, quote meme, and think about how our kids are growing up, I mean, you and I are part of a generation that didn't have the Internet when we were growing up, and we still believed in going outside and playing and using our imagination and all of that, and now you get an iPad when you're in first grade.
And
parents and teachers and everybody expects you to be computer literate by the time you're, you know, 10 years old. And it's just, it's a really bad formula. And I think we need to be really careful not to misuse the power that that starts to create. And I hope to God there are generations coming up behind me. This is where the hope factor comes. That will learn how to use these tools to the point where it will actually help create a level of freedom for people, a level of exposure, a level of, well, let's fix that. I know people high up in the tech industries who really do believe in spirituality, really do believe in love, and really do have the ability to create these massive things that can help. So hopefully we're going to have people that will learn how to use these things to such an expert level that it will be beyond the control factor, and they'll be able to be able to help. You know, we talk about Anonymous. Anonymous was a big thing that came through everybody's consciousness over the last 5 years or so. And but then it became like a call-out thing, like, we don't like you because this. Or that person isn't credible because of this. And I'm like, well, that kind of seems judgmental, right? And that doesn't really feel spiritual to me. And it almost feels like another form of decisive, you know, to be able to go in and separate people and create division and put people on sides of each other and take sides and throw stones at each other. And it's really great formula to shut people down, especially people that are doing good things or trying to tell the truth.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. People can reach me on my website, hillaryramo.com. I'm also on social media. I have, I'll be at the 49th annual MUFON conference at the end of this month doing my official book launch. I'm doing a trip to Egypt with Maria Wheatley, who is the UK's top expert on megalithic structures. We were just in Stonehenge a couple months ago, so now we're going to Egypt in February, and we're going to do a walkabout there, and we're going to really relook at some of the incredible treasures that are over in that culture and how we can apply them to exactly what we talked about today.
Great. That sounds wonderful. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a delightful interview.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I love having these conversations, so thank you for providing that platform so we could talk about this.
Well, we've been interviewing Hillary Ramio on her book, The Hillary Ramio Show Transcripts, a really wide range of excellent topics that I really advise you to get the book and read, because, like she says, the reading the book is so much more in depth than even just listening to a radio show, and it really allows you to think about things. It did me, and I've interviewed a lot of the people that she's had in her book. Next week, please join us for an interview with Dr. Eric Love, Becoming Your True Self with Bach Flower Remedies. Thanks for joining us, Hillary.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.